Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Steve, can you
yes.
hear me? Sorry, I'm having a little bit of a computer issue. My apologies, but we're rolling. We're live.
All right, and welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenez. I'm your host, Steve K9 Kim. And joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. We had a bit of a hiccup, but Gabe, how are you doing this Monday?
Never better, man. I finally got to shave that six-month mustache that I've been sporting. So I'm doing great. Great fights this weekend, and I'm excited. We got a lot to talk about.
If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 20 minutes. That number, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. And if you want to tweet us a question, a comment, a critique, any praise, we'll take it all at SteveUCNLive. At Gabriel_Montoya, but let's get started with round number one, live on HBO from the CenturyLink Center in Omaha, Nebraska. Once again, Terrence Crawford retains his WBO lightweight title, moving to 25-0 with the whitewash over Ray Beltran. Your scores, 119-109 twice and 120-108. And in the semi-main, the IBF featherweight title was retained by Evgeny Gradovich with a 12-round draw over Jason Velez. The cards read 117-111 for Gradovich, 115-113 for the Puerto Rican, and then 114-114. Gabe, I don't know what his fortune holds at 140. Things are going to be a little bit different, going to be facing bigger, stronger guys. But I'll say this, if this skill set and his size and his range translate north 5 pounds, I think it's going to take a very, very good, smart, intelligent, and talented fighter to figure out the riddle of one Terrence Crawford.
He's, I don't want to say special just yet, but he has the potential to be that. I think he's a guy that really understands himself as a boxer. He kind of breaks the mold a little bit. He's so comfortable moving back and forth between southpaw and orthodox, but he does it in this way that is just simply a different look. Let me look at this from a different angle. I'm getting hit with something. Let me eliminate that by moving over to the other side. And he's so effective at it, so poised. There's a lot of different facets to his game than just being a hard puncher. So I think, moving up, maybe the power is going to be different. We'll see what his body is. Adding an extra 5 pounds and not even going to kill himself, make that weight. I'm really excited about this guy. That was really just across-the-board professional performance. But nice to get the stop, but what an entertaining fight and a solid win.
It's been a long time since Ray Beltran, who has a good number of losses on his ledger, had been dominated to that degree. And in the last 2-3 minutes, he was absolutely drowning in a torrent of leather. And that's the one thing I've said about Terrence Crawford. I wish he would trust his hands more and realize what a great offensive fighter he can be when he gets it revved up. But he is one of the very few fighters, Gabe, that can effectively switch hit, that he's very effective boxing from the orthodox stance, and then he becomes very, very difficult to hit when he goes into a southpaw stance. And he's very, very intelligent, has a very, very high boxing IQ, good size, good reach. And, I don't see him having any real problems with size at 140, because you look at the way he's built. He's got that long torso. He's got a nice reach. He looks physically very, very strong. And, Gabe, as we look at 2014, there are some very, very strong candidates for Fighter of the Year. Sergey Kovalev, certainly. Maybe Manny Pacquiao, Gennady Golovkin. But top to bottom, looking at his resume, combining quality and quantity, I got to say, I think Terrence Crawford – might be the guy who gets his name engraved on that trophy.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, it's certainly in the conversation. You know, picking up a title, beating Yuri Orcas Gamboa, and Beltran. But you know, and HBO was doing the real hard sell. This is the best guy. If, you know, even I think Max Kellerman, Max, he's killing me, man. Said like, you know, this guy would beat any other lightweight in the world on this night. And I just don't know if I agree with that. You know, Beltran is a top-level guy, but like you said, he's lost a lot. And in this fight, he wasn't really taking a lot of chances until later in the fight. You pretty much knew how it was going to go unless something drastically changed, and he's not a puncher. So when you break it down, I mean, I don't know if Terence Crawford's been in a fight that he was supposed to lose this year or that he could. Maybe the Gamboa fight, we could say, but you could tear that apart with Gamboa's inactivity, and he's just not that good. Ultimately, that's just my opinion. So I don't know. You know, I look at Kovalev as a guy that's really he went from oh man, this is going to be a lost year to being the man at light heavyweight. That right now I still kind of like him, but what a breath of air, you know, breath of fresh air. All that said, Terence Crawford is a poised athlete. I think he could be, like I said, special. He brings a crowd. We'll see if that crowd ever has to travel for him, and if they do, will they travel? But you know, I look at him like if you had to pick a guy that to meet Pacquiao at 140 that everybody would feel kind of excited and legit about, if he maybe you know, had a couple wins at that weight or at least one, it would be Terence Crawford. He really has got a nice skill set, an ability to change, a willingness to do whatever it takes to win. And I love that when he gets hit, he gets aggressive, but it's not stupid. It's just like he reasserts himself and takes control. All those things, I think, make him an interesting puzzle for, you know, and he brings something to the table. He's going to be hard to solve as much as he's going to have to solve Manny Pacquiao.
Gabe, if there's a breakout star, if you want to call him that, or a breakout boxer of the year, not just from an achievement standpoint inside the squared circle, but in terms of raising his Q rating and upping his profile and becoming someone that's prominent, I don't think there's any doubt it's Terence Crawford, because a year ago he was just a guy that was good enough to be on the semi-main or the undercards of HBO, wasn't always exciting, but being out there June 28th against Gamboa in another sizable throng this past weekend, he is one of the rare legitimate American stateside draws that we have in this business, and even rarer, one that doesn't rely on casinos and one that is African-American. And in the past I've compared him to Virgil Hill, who carried Bismarck for years and turned that into a boxing market in the early to mid-90s. I think this goes much further than Virgil Hill, because I think he's got a better skill set, and unlike Virgil Hill, he has the support of HBO. I think Terence Crawford, when push comes to shove and he asserts himself and establishes himself at 140, I think because he's with Top Rank and because of the fact he's gotten a lot of exposure on HBO, there's no doubt in my mind he is going to be a prime candidate sooner rather than later for the Pacquiao fight. And I agree with you. I think it's that one fight, or one of the rare ones, that we say to ourselves, this is not Chris Algieri. This is not Jesse Vargas. This is a fight where Manny Pacquiao is going to really have to be at a high level to pull this through. I think Pacquiao Crawford at 140 in due time, I think that is a fascinating matchup. Gabe, I don't know about you. I don't know about you, Gabe, but I think Gradovich, he's got to wonder. I wonder, was there Cotto Promotions politics involved in this decision? In my opinion, I thought Gradovich ran away with this fight in the second half. I had it about 8-4. Other people had it 9-3. I thought other people that had it 10-2. Jason Velez is with Cotto. They want to kind of be friendly with him. I don't know. Was this a political decision?
No, I thought it was a close fight. I didn't have it 8-4. I had Gradovich winning by a point, maybe two out of a tie round. But I thought, you know, there was a lot of effort, but not a lot of achievement at times with Gradovich. And then he started way too slow, which was fine because the kid was bouncing around so much, Velez, in the first three rounds. I mean, yeah, he was doing something, but he was like, dude, you could expend half this energy and have something for the later rounds. That's experience. But I thought, you know, he reacted weird to the right hand, but I thought that HBO was making much bigger deals of the punches thrown by Gradovich, he's only got 9 knockouts. I mean, neither guy's knocking anybody out in this fight. And so it became about style and what kind of punches you liked. But I thought there was a lot of gloves and elbows from Gradovich. And it was clear that Garcia Corner, that he wasn't winning early on and that they were getting into rounds 4 and 5 and like, hey, man, I need more. I need more. So I had it a close fight, you know. But I think, you know, maybe the draw, I don't know. Like I said, I had Gradovich winning. You know, I would have saw at least 1 or 2 points. So maybe it was a little code of promotions. You know? But do they have political power but, like, not the ability to, like, promote their own shows? I don't understand how you're a promoter. But we'll see. You know, I mean, they're young. I just wonder, like, what does that mean, for, you know, political juice for a guy in Omaha? I mean, does Cotto get to really pick who the judges were? How would that play out?
Oh, it's easy. They want to keep Cotto happy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very simple, Gabe.
So.
They want to keep Cotto happy. I mean, to me, this is the perfect – this is the perfect scenario for Top Rank. They tell Miguel,
yeah,
hey, Miguel, man, we gave it a good run for you, but not the right guy kept the title. to be honest with you,
yeah,
you say activity, not an achievement. I don't think Velez did anything after the first 4 rounds except kind of take a strafing. Velez
really?
Is a guy.
I thought he got to the body quite a bit. And he landed 1-2s. He'd catch him with the right coming in. He just didn't have, you know, like Gradovich kind of bullied him. It looked like a man versus a boy in a lot of ways, you know, the way Gradovich would come forward and bully and bully. But I thought the kid made him miss quite a bit and asserted himself quite a bit. But particularly the last round, it would be a round where he would kind of start strong with the jab in the right, and then Gradovich in the second minute would close the distance, kind of start hammering into him, and then it would be anybody's game in the back end. And usually it was Gradovich's. But I don't know. You know, I watched it today, and I just felt, I don't know, HBO just gets so, they veer off into some weird, weird shit, the type of fights they're talking about. Started, like, comparing Velez to somebody else. He doesn't even fight like. But I just, overall, I mean, ignoring them, I just felt, I don't know, I felt it was closer. The kid's sloppy, though. I just don't see him. He's like a newborn, you know, baby deer. He just kind of gangly and not very strong. I wonder if he can even handle the weight, or should he move up so he can gain some strength, because I don't see him beating anybody. I mean, Gradovich is going to be competitive anywhere he goes, that style. But
yeah,
who's that going to be, you know? Well, who's Velez going to be?
Gradovich is that one featherweight belt holder that everyone else is going to race to fight because Walters is a tall order. Lomachenko is a very gifted guy. Gonzalez is still this big guy that could punch. Gradovich is imminently beatable. There's no doubt about that. The one thing I found interesting about Gradovich's performance and very mystifying, Robert Garcia was begging for hooks to the body. Now, this is what Gradovich is known for. That's his whole nickname, the Mexican-Russian, is because he
attacks
downstairs. The whole night, he, I thought, neglected the left hook to the body, and I just kept wondering, this tall, angular guy, why is he not pumping or digging left hooks to the body?
Yeah.
I don't know. Gradovich, to me, is a good, solid television fighter, but he's the very definition of belt holder. While I look at Walters and Lomachenko, I say to myself, those guys are really tough champions. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Gradovich here. Jason Velez, you know, he's developed a little bit, but he's one of these guys. He's going to have to pick a soft spot on a particular night to win a belt. And on this night, Gabe, he nearly did it. Gabe, taking a look at the card at the UK, Tyson Fury just absolutely dominates Derek Chisora in 10 rounds. Then the middleweight grudge match, Billy Joe Saunders with a split decision in 12 over Chris Eubank Jr. Gabe, am I nuts? Just, and then putting aside the politics and any jingoism, whether who's American or any of the other politics that infest boxing, if it came down to Klitschko's next fight on HBO, I would rather see Tyson Fury against Klitschko than Bryant Jennings. Agree or disagree?
Totally agree. I mean, I like Jennings. I think he's developing nicely. But there's a little more danger with Tyson Fury. I liked what he did with the jab, you know, with just that lead hand in general. He would hook off of it. He just kind of kept Chisora busy the whole time with it and was content to dominate with it. And that showed a real maturity, a real discipline that I think people accuse Fury of not having. And a willingness to, you know, if this is what's going to win me the fight, then this is what I'm going to do. And I think you need that against a Klitschko. Added to which, you know, on top of everything, he's got size and he's got power. So, yeah, if that had to be the next fight, awesome. If they were building to that, you know, they do Bryan Jennings first, maybe build towards Tyson Fury. I don't think it needs much building. I think that's a huge fight. So, yeah, it gets my vote.
If you take into account of what you just said about who travels fans? Gabe, I was there when Brian Jennings fought Mike Perez underneath Golovkin. Outside of his immediate family, there wasn't this big Philadelphia caravan to the Madison Square Garden in late July. I'll tell you this much. If Tyson Fury would get the fight in the spring at Madison Square Garden, there would be a lot of Union Jacks in that audience. I believe that Tyson Fury, say what you want about him, he moves the needle. I think he has a better resume than Brian Jennings. And then what Kathy Duba said for a long time about the Klitschkos, she says, Steve, they don't fight big guys. They always have this decided size advantage in height and overall weight. One thing you could say about Tyson Fury, he is built like a small forward, if not a power forward. So at least if they went for a jump ball, Tyson Fury would have a chance to tip the ball. The other guys he's facing really don't. That alone, I want to start to see the Klitschkos and Vladimir now in against tall, rangy guys that can at least look at them chest-to-chest or eye-to-eye. And quite frankly, we have not seen that. Okay, Billy Joe Saunders, Chris Eubank Jr., I don't know what to really say. It kind of reminded me of that fight that we watched together a couple of years ago between George Groves and James DeGale, where you got the feeling the guy that won may not be the more talented guy, but he was more ready for that fight at that particular time. Did you get
totally
the sense
that
here?
Yeah, totally that. I watched that today, too, and that's exactly it. This one guy was a seasoned professional, and if you develop a guy like Chris Eubank Jr., it made me think a little bit of Chavez Jr. In this fight, because his conditioning didn't seem great, his discipline didn't seem great, but I'll tell you, that's one of the stranger father-son combinations going on. Like, I mean, he's a sharp-dressed man, don't get me wrong, but kind of surreal, right? It seemed a little strange.
Gabe, anything with Chris Eubank Sr. is a bit surreal and strange, okay? And he is now pound for pound the best-dressed corner man of all time, supplanting Joe Goosen. Because Joe Goosen always went kind of casual dressy, like he's going to the club or the Roxy. Chris Eubank looked like he was going to the senior prom.
I was like, it was very strange. But you know, when he walked in the ring, I was like, what, this is kind of, and just his whole demeanor. But I wonder if he's ever going to get out of that shadow. But I think, you know, Eubank Jr. will be better for this fight. You know, maybe it's good that he loses. And, you know, something, interesting is that here's a guy in Saunders that is positioned for a big fight, but decides to take this kind of fight where he could lose and lose that position. And it's fighters fight, man. And it's really how they used to do it. It's kind of, you know, these battles between local guys that want to get in there and prove that they're the one that should represent their location. I really enjoyed the fight. It was, looking at Twitter again, it was kind of like, I get the sense that it wasn't that good of a fight. And I don't know, it was a little sloppy for my taste, but fun nonetheless. Well, you know, the Chisora Fury one was a little
monotonous. That was monotonous.
Yeah, a little monotonous.
One round looked like the other. As soon as Fury got into the southpaw stance and figured out that Chisora could not stop the straight jab from the front side, that fight was over. And it kind of reminded me of that old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I give Tyson Fury credit for this. He found something that worked, and he didn't stray from it. Now, as it related to the semi-main, the drama in that fight was the last, let's say, 4 to 5 rounds. And you said to yourself, man, if Eubank would have been a little bit more settled in the beginning, trusted himself to stay in the pocket and let his hands go, this could have been a different fight. But then there's that old saying, too little, too late. Gabe, let's get to some of the tweets here. We start off with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. Guys, doesn't it seem like Crawford's one of those guys who fights to the level of his opponent? Can dial it up or just coast by? Gabe?
Sorry, I'm having a little technological issue. Can you say the question again?
Yes, Andrew V. Kennedy tweets, doesn't it seem like Crawford's one of those guys who fights to the level of his opponent? Can just dial it up or just coast by?
I think he's... I don't know, there's peaks and valleys within his fights. I think he's just seeing, you know, I don't think he fought down to Beltran's level at all. I mean, I think that's a really, experienced guy. And I was watching the fight, and I was noticing how Here's a guy that, you know, he decided to turn southpaw. And I remember when I first started, like, when I first walked into a boxing gym, like, at 19 and started to train and everything, I lined up as a southpaw, as I always do, and as naturally I've always done. And they made me go around to the right hand and be an orthodox guy. And there's so many guys from that era, they didn't want to deal with southpaws. Nobody wants to train a southpaw. And then you're also taught, like, don't switch back and forth. You want to stay one way. Like, boxing's very closed-minded like that. And over the last, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years, you started to see more southpaws emerge, and not just cuties, but aggressive guys. But you're also starting to see this kind of switch back and forth. And I just watching, like, here's a guy that isn't thought of as a southpaw that switches to it and is able to befuddle a guy who has been the sparring partner and been in the ring, you know, more than anybody else. In Manny Pacquiao, you know, the Ray Beltran, he knows what a southpaw looks like, and he was getting befuddled at times. I was very impressed by that. So I think this is he's a gamer a bit, Crawford. He knows how to put on a show. He knows how to be aggressive. He's not just going to stink it out in front of the hometown. He's got some pride. So, yeah, no, I don't think he fights down at all.
Oh, here's one from our European correspondent, Andy Finlayson. I noticed Bevis Shumanov is fighting soon, and I've got a question. Who are some of the worst belt holders in recent years, in your opinion? Well, Gabe, Andy just listed one. Shumanov.
Yeah.
He'd be at the top of that list.
Andre Berto's kind of, one of the weirder, you know, runs, and one of the weaker runs at welterweight. I don't know if I call him the worst champion, because he actually could fight and was in some entertaining bouts. But it's one of the weaker reigns. I don't know. Sven Otke.
I got one. And this is going to raise the ire of our British listeners. Darren Barker. he was one of them. Here's
Chavez
a tweet.
Jr.
Oh, yes. There's no doubt about it, because he was basically had the red carpet rolled out for him, and we were both there. To this day, Gabe, I don't know if he beat Sebastian Zibic at the Staples Center. I thought that fight was at best
right.
a draw for Chavez.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's a guy that they just really kept spoon-feeding. And, you know, it's the thing, you can't make a guy train. You can't make a guy want it. And I don't think you ever want it. It's hard to want it when you've already got it, I think. You know, that's Chavez Jr.'s problem.
Okay, and here's one from Matthew Mojica. We might as well address this early. Mickey Rourke, great boxer or the greatest of all time? Gabe, that card in Russia this past Thanksgiving, which we should call Leftovers because it was actually on Friday, Ruslan Provodnikov with the fifth-round mercy killing of Jose Luis Castillo. And thankfully, nothing grave happened. But Mickey Rourke's fight against this guy who I had seen for years, never knew his name, who ended up diving like Greg Louganis against Mickey Rourke. First of all, I'm not outraged at all by this because this is so farcical. And we knew Mickey Rourke wasn't going to lose. But, Gabe, here's what I found interesting. It's clear to me Mickey Rourke did no VADA testing. I mean, for a 62-year-old guy, his body was ripped. I was impressed. I'll be honest. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I mean, not an ounce of fat on him and a lot of deep cuts and definite. Yeah, I wonder how that happened. The thing, people are saying, well, it is just an exhibition. But, like, an exhibition of what? Like, how sport can be easily bought? Like, you know, it's like a millionaire. Like, you know, if you're a millionaire, you can just buy an experience. I want to know what it's like to win a fight in Russia, you know, and so you pay for it and you do it. I mean, apparently the guy, you know, Daily Mail reported he's a homeless guy that has been homeless for a couple years or a year or so, and he trains with the Wild Card. Rourke flew him over, and the whole thing was just, you know, quote-unquote an exhibition. I mean, I don't know. It just seems strange. When I heard whispers about Mickey Rourke's other fights being fixed, So I just kind of wonder, you know, I don't know, is this sport that up for sale? I mean, I hate to be that guy all the time, but it's like this whole card, it was just shameful, embarrassing for all involved. But, you know,
what's interesting about that guy that fought, quote unquote fought. Mickey Rourke.
I'm going to play this weekend, Steve.
Yeah, except yours was actually followed the script perfectly. If you're going to fix the fight, you still have to be willing to get hit.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. Literally, there was probably more contact in our play. I'm not kidding. This thing was embarrassing. He didn't look like, he looked like he was underwater. Rourke acted like he actually did something. The guy kind of didn't really get hit. It was, you know, when you pull a punch back after you landed, maybe it looks a little bad. I was just, wow. I thought he was a better actor than that. But, you know, maybe he should have trained with him and gave him some acting lessons.
And people are making it sound like certain people that he's just a homeless guy that hung around the wild card. I can tell you for a fact, he used to work out all the time. And he's actually had an amateur fight or two. But the guy is down on his luck, needed to make a few bucks. It is the holiday season. And I listen, I've known the guy. I've interacted with him a little bit. I never knew he was homeless. But to me, when Provodnikov Castillo is not the most farcical thing on any card in 2014, that tells you that is Russia with no love. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to send in a tweet, give us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCNLive. At Gabriel_Montoya. We're here for about another hour before Monday Night Football. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
It's hard to make jokes about the card because the card was such a joke.
That was the joke.
585.
Yeah.
Exactly. 585, you're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Jake here from State Farm.
Jake! What are you doing with your khaki pants? What's going on?
My khaki pants. I saw a tweet by Rich Laser talking about how there's going to be a lot of big name fighters changing promotional outfits in the next 90 days, but none of them will be going to Heyman. He said. So, I mean, do you have any information on that?
No, I really don't. I don't know exactly. You know, listen, Rick is a friend of me and Gabe's. He has information. He does work in the business, contrary to what certain people may claim. But I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of in the dark on that one, Gabe.
Yeah, he got me on that one. I was like, well, let's see. I mean, I could speculate, but I mean, I would just be, you know, your guess is as good as mine. You know, that's not what we do on the show. But I'm very curious. To see what's up, you know. Rick is an interesting guy. I mean, sometimes he's kind of Captain Obvious, and a little bit, you know, he can be like, we've been talking about this stuff, and he kind of acts like, I'm the only one that knows this. But then there's other times where he says stuff that's just so on point and later comes true. He's generally on point, so, you know.
And Gabe,
I want to know who they are.
And Gabe, speak for yourself. I speculate an awful lot on this show.
Okay, yeah, I guess we do. Yeah, but I mean, you know, I could just start guessing and be like, well, yeah, I could have thought of that. Basically, I have no original thought on the subject. But I wonder if it's guys that, you know, if we're about to find out the who's Al Heyman fighter, who's a Golden Boy fighter, you know, or guys, you know, maybe they're going to be defecting from being with the Al Heyman puppets, you know, the promotions that pretend that they have a fighter, but they're really with Al Heyman. Is that going to end? We'll see.
Jake, on the Al Heyman front, I can tell you one thing. He is still actively looking to sign everybody and anybody that's out there, even to this day. Just keep that in mind.
Who do you – I mean, okay, my next question is, Crawford didn't look – I mean, the size difference between Beltran and Crawford was negligible. And Beltran's not really a big lightweight at all. Yeah, do you see him struggling against the higher weight guy, against the bigger guys at 140?
That's going to be the question, though, Gabe, isn't it? To me, he looks like he has the type of body that can move up north, and he's got a very good skill set. He's still a very good athlete. I think he's only 26 years old. I'll be honest with you. Will there be an adjustment period like there is any time a fighter moves up in weight at the world-class level? I'm sure there will be. But again, if I had $2 to bet on the success or failure of Terrence Crawford at 140, Gabe, I would put it on him being a success eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I always look at, like, Trinidad when he moved from 47 to 54, a guy that was just clearly rejuvenated by just adding some weight and not having to kill himself and feeling not quite so sick on the day of the fight. So I think, yeah, you look at Crawford's frame. You know, I think he's gonna put on some weight. Is he a welter waiting to happen? I don't know about all that. But certainly at 140, I think he'd be very effective. And I think he'll probably gain some strength. You might even see a little more aggression out of him because he's got a little more something to give. Considering his effort in the 12th round, all the way through the fight, that's gonna be something to see. So I think he'd be fine.
Do you see any top-ranked guys or Golden Boy guys currently that could possibly go to Al Heyman? I mean, what guys are most likely, in your opinion?
You know, Mikey Garcia is putting out these cryptic messages, and I'm being told that his return, it's not as positive as was being reported a couple of weeks ago, and that they had another meeting and things have kind of hit a roadblock. So he's definitely gone the James Kirkland route to Bolivian. You know, I'm not sure, but I'll say this. If you look at the recent track record, when it relates to Bob Arum clients, when they say they have a contract, they have a contract. Just ask Nonito Donaire.
Yeah, I don't understand it. What does it say about a sport when Mickey Rourke fights more often than, you know, the Mikey Garcias and the Andre Wards of the year, you know, of the sport? You know, exhibition or no, the guy's out there.
You're not going to get out of a contract from a Jewish lawyer from Brooklyn very easily, I don't think.
Who went to Harvard, by the way, as Oscar De La Hoya once reminded us.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't see it happening. I don't understand what the play is, and especially because it's not just about the individual fighter. But, you know, these are companies warring with a guy that is trying to take over the sport, trying to sign everybody, put it under his umbrella, and make all the money. Top Rank's never going to let that happen. So they're certainly not going to let one of their prize guys who they've invested a ton of money in just go away and then go across the street. It's just not going to happen.
Jake, we got to get running, okay?
All right, thanks, guys.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. In about 15 minutes, we will preview the triple header from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, HBO's Boxing After Dark. Gabe, who's next?
703, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good evening. This is Luis.
Good, what's going on?
Hey, what's up? Listen, I just want to say real quick, I watched that fight of Castillo and Provodnikov on YouTube. I got to say something about Provodnikov. I mean, definitely his power is real. And I don't think he's actually getting the point that he shouldn't be overcrowding his own offense. At least that's what I observed, that he could have taken Castillo out of there much quicker, but he kept overcrowding or smothering his own offense by failing to cut the distance with the jab. Like, he tends to abandon the jab a lot. And I guess maybe it's no secret, but I don't know. I guess that's what he is missing as a fighter, you know.
I think, you know, when you're overmatched with someone, you know, and you're expected to blow him out, I think he was in a hurry, you know. I think he abandoned the jab. I on no level did I think this was a good fight for him. I don't think he learned a whole hell of a lot out of it. It was a lose-lose situation because if you knock Castillo out early, everybody goes, oh, man, like, how terrible. But if you struggle with him, at even just a little bit or go too deep into the fight, then everybody's like, oh, man, he struggled, you know. So I just didn't understand the benefit, and I didn't any of the justifications. I like Artie Pahulo, but this was just crappy all around. And then on top of it, yeah, he didn't really fight that great. I didn't think he looked good. You know, he got the guy out of there, you know, but we already knew he was going to do that. It was about how he was going to do that.
James, this is what you call the classic no-win situation. Because if you blow him out of there, you're supposed to. And if it goes past four rounds, it becomes an indictment. And I know the reasons why they had to choose or not had to, or why they ended up settling for Castillo. The network wanted him. He's a recognizable name. But just no good came out of this. Let's just put it that way. Outside the fact, everyone got paid a lot of money.
That's basically it.
Yeah, and just real quick, I just wanted to, Branovich, I definitely saw him win on Saturday. I saw a close fight. I'm in the car, so I don't have my scorecards with me, but I see this guy losing to Gonzalez, Lomachenko, Walters, guys that can actually pump a jab out there consistently and are technically sound. Yeah, I can definitely see Granovich having issues with guys like that. hey, it's going to be exciting. He's going to go out on his shield, definitely. I want to see more of that guy. And Terrence Crawford, I really want to see more of him. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but Beltran, to me, reminds me in so many ways of Rocky Juarez. Great guys, great technicians, but, man, they always wait for that perfect punch. And a few times I saw him, like, really getting on a rhythm, he was getting to Crawford, but then he would, like, cut the ring, get close, you know, do the right things, but sometimes he would be observing Crawford without doing much, you know, and that's what I wanted to see out of this fight, and I guess the fight was over, and as exciting as it was, I kind of wanted to see a little bit more of that. Like, I kept waiting for Beltran to get close and, you know, get some work, but hey.
But, you know, Beltran doesn't fight that way. That was the thing that I looked at this fight, and Beltran was going to need, in order to win, he was going to need to do what Gradovich did, which was to, you know, brawl the boxer. Go after him, go for broke, take chances. But, you know, Ray's a professional guy. He wants to live to fight another day. And he kind of fights tentatively. He kind of boxes a little bit more than – that's his tendency. He's not really a brawler. And so, I mean, looking at the fight, it was always kind of going to be a Terrence Crawford fight because it's just the nature of the two styles. It was going to be a boxing match with one guy being the faster man. And when he did start taking chances, he did pretty good. What's that?
Gabe, the term sparring partner mentality comes into play here because, listen, I have a lot of respect for Ray Beltran. He has turned himself into a pretty good fighter. But at the end of the day, that's the pace and the tempo that he's kind of been bred to fight in through all these gym sessions with some blue-chip fighters. And that was the talk at the gym today. You know, he used to work out there all the time before he went over to the Santa Monica West with the Wild Card West. That square pegs don't die round. And you're suddenly not going to turn a guy that's very judicious in his punch output into a guy that is suddenly young Meldrick Taylor. That doesn't happen. You are who you are. And that particular in-and-out darting style of Crawford is absolute poison for a guy like Ray Beltran. Louie, we got to get running. Thank you for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, I got to read you this tweet from Matthew Mojica. What do you think about Peter Quillen being casted as the Black Mamba Roger Mayweather? I'm sure you heard about this, but Peter Quillen is now acting because, quite frankly, he ain't fighting, Gabe.
Wow. Yeah, I guess anybody can do it, right? I'm not really sure. I'm really very curious to see him give a shot of acting. I recently got to watch Paulie Malignaggi, at least a trailer for a film that he did when he tried to act. Hopefully Peter does better than Paul.
And here is another one from Matthew Mojica. He says, any chance of Crawford versus Provodnikov in the near future? Would Arum make that fight? In my gut feel, Gabe, if Arum had his way, nobody in his stable would ever fight the Siberian Rocky.
Really? You think so? You think that guy's just going to get completely edged out? I mean, where does he go?
Yeah. Unless HBO uses their leverage and flat out tells Bob, because remember, that's how they made the Alvarado fight. They basically gave him no other options. And then once he basically wrecked Alvarado, you know, Ari Palullo has been on the record of saying, I've been told by Top Rank that, hey, we're not fighting him at all with any of our guys, Brandon Rios, Terrence Crawford, Tim Bradley again. I think they are a Siberian Rocky-free zone over there at Top Rank.
Wow, the Cold War just never ends.
Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. In a couple minutes, we will preview HBO's Boxing After Dark from the Barclays Center. Gabe, who's next on the line?
In the 530, you're live on the next round. 530.
Hey, good evening, guys. It's Ringside Robert here. I'm looking forward to seeing Crawford at 140. I think he'll do better at that division. And remember, he came in weighing 153 fight night, so I think 140 will be a lot easier for him, and I think we'll see a different fighter at that weight. Number two, I'm not going to hate the Tyson Fury Brian Jennings fight because in order to pump up a Klitschko fight for American television, I think it's a good idea to put Fury on American TV against an American fighter, you know, just to build it up over here a little bit. I'm looking forward to seeing Fury and Klitschko fight because I came out here after Klitschko fought and I said the two heavyweights I want to see Klitschko fight is Fury and Dante Wilder, and it looks like Fury is going to get the first shot at that. So I'm looking forward to that fight when it happens. Number three, last week you were asking people if they were willing to pay $100 for the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. Yes, I would definitely be willing to pay that because I've come up with a scenario. I don't know if it's possible, but if you put Pacquiao-Mayweather, Kovalev, Stevenson, and other fights like that. If you make other fights like that, I think the bigger the names, you know, it would be worthwhile to boxing fans to do it. What do you think?
Well, first of all, if this $100 pay-per-view happens, I am personally blaming my partner here, Gabe Montoya, for even bringing up the idea because they will take it, and they're going to exploit the boxing fans. Second of all, in that situation, they're not putting on any other primetime fight because the budget will be blown out. That's fantasy land thinking right there. Because the bottom line is if you're paying these guys in upwards of $100 million, theoretically, to make this fight, should it ever happen, they're going to do as little as possible in terms of expenditures for the undercards. And I still remember, Gabe, how bad the undercard was for Mayweather-De La Hoya. It was one of the worst undercards ever, and guess what, Gabe?
Horrible.
Because the main event sold, they still sold a record. It didn't matter, and that's always been the theory used in the industry. A lot of De La Hoya undercards featured Mia Saint can't fight, and I can't believe it's not Butterbean, and it didn't matter, and I think the same would apply here.
Good point,
yeah,
I didn't think about that.
People are addicted to stupidity in boxing on some level. And they really encourage the sport to act out in the very worst ways. And to me, the number one way the fans do this is through buying terrible pay-per-views. You know, we all knew Marquez Mayweather, and you could say what, you know, history later on, whatever happened. At that time, a guy jumping up from where Marquez was to that weight, and then the whole weight debacle, that was a garbage fight. And
yes, it was.
You know, and people bought it, and it did well. And when you do that, you just encourage them to rip you off. I mean, you know, trash sells. I mean, historically, you know, what McDonald's over a billion served or whatever. The Transformers did billions of dollars, that whole series, and they're all garbage. But so I don't know how we get out of this. But if people pay $100 and we set that bar, I mean, you just have yourselves to blame.
Oh, by the way, guys, you know how I know this fight's not going to happen, Pacquiao Mayweather? We're now getting press releases from Arab Emeritus
yeah.
investors that we're going to put up XYZ millions of dollars, and we are serious about making this happen and working. I'm just like, oh, my God, this is bizarre world, and it's happening again.
I'm waiting to get the letter from Nigeria. Please, I need help. I'm trying to get made with the Pacquiao fight, you know. But we're
you know what that is? That is spam dressed up as a boxing press release, Gabe. That's all that is.
It is. It is. You just look at it and you're like, really, guys? Come on. I mean, we've been through this. I'm still waiting, you know, for Bob to contract the people to do Burning Man to do the temporary stadium in Vegas. You know, it's all just such a joke. But
I'm putting, guys, I'm putting the over-under on Dubois hosting the fight. I'm going to get that press release, I'd say, by Wednesday at 4 o'clock Eastern time because it's only a matter of time.
Okay, but no, seriously, back to...
we're being serious, Robbie.
Yeah,
we're being very serious.
No, I understand. That's good. But getting back to Fury and Jennings, I think Fury would win that fight, but I think the only time I've ever seen him on US TV is when he fought Steve Cunningham. And I think
right, but Robbie, my
yeah.
original point was, if it came down to who would you rather see face Klitschko next, Jennings or Fury, honestly, I would rather see Fury. Now, Fury-Jennings, that's a very good young heavyweight fight, if you want to call these guys young. Brian Jennings, to me, his big victory has been a very under-motivated Mike Perez.
I agree with you.
And he's been inactive the last year. And I'm not saying Fury's been all that active, but there have been some injury issues with him at least. Brian Jennings has just kind of played keep away here.
I totally agree with you. Like I said before, I'm looking forward to Fury Klitschko because, you know, that's one of the fighters I want to see Klitschko fight. I read some articles this morning saying that Klitschko's next fight was supposed to be in March, but they didn't say who against. So, you know, it's like
What the word is, HBO is really pushing hard for Brian Jennings, and I suspect that it's because he is from the good old U.S. of A. Robbie, we got to get running, okay?
Okay, see you later.
Before we go back to the phone lines, and again, we're halfway through here. We're here till 8:30 Eastern time, then you can switch over to Monday Night Football. Gabe, let's take a look at the HBO Boxing After Dark card from Brooklyn, New York. The featured attraction, middleweight battle, Gabe Rosado takes on David Lemieux. Then a junior middleweight showdown between the boss, Hugo Centeno, and James De La Rosa. And then welterweight battle, Thomas DeLorme takes on Hank Lundy. Gabe, an overview of this card, I think, is that there's no great fights. There's no marquee fighters here. But overall, I get the sense this is a fun card top to bottom.
Yeah, I think so. You know, De La Rosa is going to bring out the best in Hugo Centeno, who's a guy that's still kind of figuring himself out. He goes rounds. He's in action fights. He comes to fight. I would like to see him rematch Julian Williams at some point. I think there's definitely unfinished business there. That's never going to happen. But he's going to be in an action fight, you know, to me, the DeLorme versus Lundy, I think Lundy's action tendencies will bring out the best in DeLorme, hopefully, and we get ourselves some combustion there. But Lemieux Rosado, I mean, you know, I read your piece today. I mean, talk about a hard-nosed professional, Rosado. Love the way he takes care of his career and really just kind of handles himself, whereas Lemieux is a guy that's having to prove that he has himself under control. He packs a punch in both hands. And go for broke style. Like, it's just, to me, that's matchmaking heaven right there, Lemieux, Rosado. It's all going to be good.
Gabe, you covered Lemieux pretty extensively a couple of years ago before he imploded in many ways in and out of the ring. How much growth do you think he's had? Because if he's the real deal, if he's a middleweight that we take seriously, in my opinion, he needs to beat a guy like Rosado. So the question is he the same guy that fell apart against Marco Antonio Rubio?
No, I think, you know, I think he's staying, from what I understand, a little more on the straight and narrow, staying more focused and in shape between fights, kind of maturing into understanding what he's got to do. I don't think he's ever going to be a technical wizard, but I think he does understand how to get the most out of what he's got. Because he's got really short arms, so he's making himself a little more compact. He does have a tendency to get wide and get a little overly aggressive, but he's kind of like a Kirkland. It's like, do you really try to smooth out his edges and make him nice and slow and box real classic and pretty, or do you let him go out there and be a wrecking ball and let the chips fall where they may? I think he's still more like the wrecking ball. God, Kirkland Lemieux would be a hell of a fight. But I'm picking him in this fight. I think he breaks down, gets Rosado into exchanges he shouldn't be getting into in this fight. He should be the boxer, puncher, boxer first always in this fight. He's not going to do it, and Lemieux knocks him out in 9 rounds.
I'm going to go with Lemieux also, and Hugo Centeno, I've seen him work with Eric Brown the last couple of months. I sense there's going to be some technical improvement there. I think he'll be stronger on his legs. I think he'll be sharper with his punches. I think Eric Brown's been very good for Centeno. And, you know, Hank Lundy, say what you want about him, how flawed he is. He's fun to watch. Stuff happens when he's in that ring, and that's good enough for me. Here, boy, I tell you what, Andrew V. Kennedy is no fan of Kid Chocolate. He says, guys, Quillen's not acting. He's just being himself. He's been fake his whole life. Whew. That's harsh.
I got no love for the guy. I really don't. I really don't. I don't want to, you know, get into all of it, but, I mean, you know, I wished him all the worst luck in the world. And I meant that. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I always think it's interesting, you know, watching boxers. People try to cross over into acting that haven't really done it. And people always make it seem like it's something easy to do. Maybe it is on film when you can just stop and do it over and over and over again. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
718.
You're live on the next round.
Hello, guys?
718.
Hello. That was odd.
That was really odd. It's like he freaked himself out. 917, you're live on the next round.
Hey, you guys, good fella, get thing, man. What's up, man? This is Francisco from Boxeo Mundial. What's going on, guys?
Hey, what's,
hey, what's
on?
Up?
Welcome to the next round.
What's up, man? What's up, Gabe?
How you doing, man?
Good, man. The Terrence Crawford, you know, I'm one of those guys that when you have a guy like Terrence Crawford who comes out on the scene and does very well like he has been doing, I'm very skeptical, you know. I mean, you see a lot of guys come out and they look awesome, and then next thing you know, you're hearing about them drowning in a fight or getting beat up. His boxing ability, he boxes very well, especially from a southpaw stance. I mean, you know, some guys switch southpaw because they're trying to figure something out, but he can fight southpaw also very well. Punching power there, I didn't see anything, you know, that would tell me that he's moving up to 40, he's going to be a power puncher. But he has real good boxing ability. I just think I would like to see him in a firefight and how he would deal with a guy that can't be so easily figured out. I think he has a good boxing IQ where he could switch. He's a thinker in there, so it makes him for a candidate of definitely maybe a great fighter. I mean, when I say great fighter, it's really hard for me to even say that word amongst the fighters of today. But he's definitely shown, you know, that he has the goods. But am I ready to jump on a bandwagon? I'm not going to say that. So I think at 140, we'll see what he has moving up in weight, you know.
You know, Francisco, remember when he first burst onto the scene, if you want to use that term, on HBO, it was against Brutus Prescott, a long,
mm-hmm.
tall, big, sizable 140-pounder. And he really boxed. And, again, that was a tough circumstance. I get the sense, Gabe, that version and that type of Terrence Crawford is going to be more the norm as he goes up to junior welterweight.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think he's going to be more aggressive. I don't know, you know, what the career path is going to be. I mean, if they're moving towards Pacquiao, then, you know, and it depends. You know, like, to me, the matchmakers at top rank know what's up more than any other in the sport. They're just really sharp guys, very experienced. And you look at this and you say, well, is he going to be like, are they trying to build off of what's left of Manny Pacquiao? Is there not much left? And they're building towards making Terrence Crawford that next big crossover superstar? Because, I mean, he's got the personality, he's got the looks, he's got the style. So, you know, or are they going to do a hard gauntlet there? And maybe they'll meet at 40, goes back up. I'm very curious about the career path, but there's no doubt that I think he's going to get more out of being bigger. You know, you probably won't see that either. You know,
I think the problem with Crawford probably is, you know, today boxing controversy sells. You know, a brash talker, a guy who uses his mouth a lot, you know, and it's in the headlines, or maybe just a trash talker, a good trash talker, sells tickets. He doesn't seem like that type of guy.
But Francisco,
you know,
there is a caveat there to Terrence Crawford, is that he has a home base. So that's the variable that's a little bit different. You're right.
I don't agree with the idea that a black guy has to be a bad guy in order to be popular.
No, I don't think Ali wasn't a bad guy. I mean, Ali wasn't a bad guy. He was a trash talker, but was he a bad guy, really?
He was considered a bad guy. I mean, I think we kind of forget how vilified he was. Now, most of the mainstream media wouldn't even call him Muhammad Ali. They kept calling him Cassius Clay for many years. Some writers, you know, just never really crossed over. But I think, you know, he may not be like a super dynamic guy. But, I mean, look at Manny Pacquiao. He doesn't really speak a lot of English, but what English he does, he's totally the white hat guy. He's totally Mr. Nice Guy. Doesn't really give you any quotable quotes. I mean, nowadays they are.
Yeah, but Pacquiao,
I think that's Brent Sternberg.
Pacquiao gives you fights, you know, great fights. I mean, that's really what put him on the map is his fights.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of his fights put him on the map. He didn't really need, like, Roberto Duran didn't speak any English, right? But the way he fought put him on the map. The same thing with Felix Trinidad. You know, he didn't speak any English either.
Or Chavez.
Exactly.
Speak for themselves.
You know what, those guys, but guys, there's an issue here, and you contrast this to Andre Ward. Neither of them are what I call vivacious personalities, although I think Crawford's a much friendlier guy, but there's a big difference. Crawford's willing to fight. I mean, he put in his work this year. He fought three times, which is three times more than Andre Ward. And if you look at Golovkin, he doesn't have the most outrageous personality either. Neither does Kovalev. But the guys who are willing to fight more than twice a year and put in some work, guess what? They go places.
That's
true.
The talking he does is not boring. I mean, I've known Andre for as long as I've known any fighters in the game, and there's just something a little cold about him, a little business about him. And it's always been that way. And he's got kind of, reminds me of like a 1930s like gangster or something, kind of, you know, Murder Incorporated. You know, some people call it smug.
Whitey Ward?
Yeah, he just got kind of like a very cold business-like demeanor about him. But you know he's a stone killer in there, you know. But it's not exciting. It's not exciting at all. It doesn't translate over. You know, with Crawford, he's kind of laid-back dude. But like you said, friendly. And friendly translates into viewers more than anything else, I think.
Francisco, anything else we got to get running here?
Not very much, guys.
All right, you have a great Monday night.
Great fight, you know.
Thanks, Gabe, who's next on deck here?
It's at 347. You're live on the next round.
Hey, good evening, Gabe. Good evening, Steve. It's Amilcar speaking.
Amilcar, welcome
up,
aboard.
Man.
Yeah, it was good, man. You guys missed out on the Ramon Alvarez-Vivian Harris fight. I was waiting
on
you.
I watched it, and let me just say one thing. Again, one of my favorite lines in boxing, they don't give you gold watches as a retirement. They give you beatings, and I just think it's shameful that booking agents, promoters, and managers are still using Vivian Harris.
Totally. And
criminal. Totally
the
criminal.
The mismatch report is long overdue, Gabe. I'm hoping you're going to get back at that at some point because that was really important in terms of the coverage of these types of fights.
That's something I probably would be interested in doing again. You know, I've been thinking about it lately. Just closed my play, so I finished out like a 4-month chapter last night. So, yeah, it's kind of time to think about, doing those kinds of things. I mean, I look at the sport and, you know, we could laugh it off about Mickey Rourke and all that, but, I mean, that was essentially like some weird – I mean, that was the co-feature. It wasn't like the opening bout. It wasn't the third bout. It was the co-feature. And – yeah, he had, like, Dan Raphael doing an interview with, like, Mickey Rourke about it. And you can call it an exhibition, but what the hell was
really?
That?
Batman Scoop?
Did he really?
Batman Scoop was making an appearance?
It was on, somebody tweeted it to me. It was, you know, Dan Raphael, and it was, like, the lead-in to him talking to him about it or something. And it was just, to me, unless, if you're the top guy, or any of us, I think we all should have decried this thing. And what the hell? I mean, what do you, how far does money go? For you to go
far.
In there and I guess far. Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Look, Gabe, you're serious? Dan Raphael actually interviewed Mickey Rourke?
Dude,
I did not
totally
know that.
I didn't know if it was his comments on it, but it was somebody sent me the lead to it. It's on my Twitter feed. I'm trying to pull it up now. But
I haven't been to Russia, but I'm sure they have buffets there. So, I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, okay. We don't have to go personal there. Anyway, Alvarez,
right.
What's going on?
All right, so here's a question I had for you guys. I mean, I organized a little fight party last week, and I was constantly getting the typical, you know, version of, you know, are we there yet, which is the when does the fight start question. And, I mean, honestly, last week I fell asleep during the Crawford-Beltran fight at the beginning. What is the business reason for these fights starting after midnight? I mean, especially
you know
a card on HBO. I just have never understood this.
Yeah.
The milk car, that is – a great point you brought up, because a couple of weeks ago I was talking to Larry Merchant, and I said to Larry, and this had to be in early November, and I said, Larry, you going to Atlantic City to watch the fight? And he said, Steve, I was thinking about going, because as a fan I'm interested. There's nothing, you know, I'm just kicking around, Steve. I don't have to report to work any day soon. And he said, Steve, when I found out that the broadcast starts at such and such a time, and the main event's not going to end till 1, I said, I'm not going out there for that shit. And it speaks to your point. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of the newspapers years ago stopped covering boxing because you couldn't make the deadline. And I agree with you. Listen, maybe they didn't want to run into the Iron Bowl because Alabama and Auburn, which we had on our other TV, was a great game, and that's a ratings grabber. But there comes a point where you just got to say, listen, this is our event. We stand by it, and we don't want anyone falling asleep halfway through our event.
No, and go ahead, Gabe.
Oh, no, go ahead. It just doesn't make a lot of sense what they do to you guys. I've covered a couple fights over there in New York. I'm like, dude, why is this so late? I just don't get it.
And I'm a hardcore fan, so if anyone's going to stay up to watch a fight, it's me. But, I mean, everybody's body clock has its limits, and I work. And, you know, 12:20, I'm there, I'm nodding off, and then I wake up in the morning. I mean, look, my Russian's getting better because every week I have to turn on the YouTube and check out a Russian YouTube video of what's been going on. But, I mean, I think it's ridiculous. They just start too late.
Yeah, and I don't know if – and when that's ever going to change, to be honest with you. I think the genie is out of the bottle. And unfortunately, these 11 p.m. Eastern – see, we're spoiled on the West Coast. This doesn't really affect us, Amilcar. However, for guys like you, yeah, this is very, very problematic.
Totally. And lastly, before I go, do you see Chris Algieri as a possible opponent for Terrence Crawford, given that he still has that championship at 140 and that he's got a name and just fought Pacquiao?
Yes, I do believe so. But, Gabe, we do know this. There is a rematch clause that is still very valid for Ruslan Provodnikov and Algieri. So that issue has to be cleared up.
That seems like the logical fight to me, that they and I'm looking at the ESPN coverage of, as Dan Raphael discussing Mickey Rourke, the link that's already sent to me. But I think that's a logical fight for both sides. It's a fight that HBO can make. They don't have to coerce Bob, damage any sort of relationship. Algieri's people are you know, Star Boxing is close with, you know, Banner. I think Banner has a little piece of Algieri, if I'm not mistaken.
They do, yes.
So, I mean, make the fight, put it on HBO. I'd watch it again. I think a lot of people want to see if Algieri can turn do that again, outbox him or, make it have a clearer win than he did the first time. I think Provodnikov has given us enough excitement that it just makes sense to reward him with a fight at that level.
Hmm. Amilcar, we got to get running, okay?
No doubt. I'm going to enjoy the show. Apologies to Mr. Raphael, and keep it up, guys. I really appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot. We have about another half hour. Make sure you jump in here, 347-215-7598. And here is a bold prediction from Matthew Mojica. He says, I got Rosado stopping David in 7. David got outboxed by Alcine. Valid point, Gabe?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, it's going all the way back. I mean, you can focus in on a guy's worst moment, but what about everything he's done after that? Won a bunch of fights since then. I mean, he lost with Rubio, which was a fight that Russ Amper didn't want. And David was kind of being a bit of a rock star. He was kind of a young, wild guy. I'm not sure how much that's changed. I mean, it's just kind of his personality. But the Alcine fight, I think, was his first fight without Russ Amper. So he's kind of lost there for a second. And it seems like now, watching his career, that he's settled in and is more focused and more consistent with each performance. It's not kind of feast or famine for him. Again, he's never going to be, a pound-for-pound guy, a skill guy. He is a two-fisted puncher who fights with reckless abandon. That's what he's going to be. So, I don't know. Rosado could tame him, outbox him. It's going to take a lot. I mean, he has been hurt. But do you think of Rosado as a one-punch knockout guy? I mean, I don't know. He can whack a bit, but...
No. Another issue is, Gabe, and we didn't bring this up, he's been cut a lot. And with guys that are cut, there's a residual damage, and scar tissue is an issue. And I just wonder if facially he's going to hold up. That's another reason why I do favor Lemieux in this fight. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
You got it. In the 787, you're live on the next round. 787.
No go.
215, you're live on the next round. 215. Are you there? 215? Nope. If you are, you just got knocked off. in the 724, you're live on the next round. Got quite a bit of calls to go through, so.
Yeah.
724. Just moving down. The 111, you're live on the next round. You know, to avoid this, you could download the Leave It in the Ring app. Although I'm not sure. I mean, they may show up on there, too. But you got to hit the one to let me know that you want to talk. 407, you're live on the next round. 407. Is it something
this
like
is
that?
Now becoming Joe DiMaggio's hit streak. This is impressive. I got to tell you, we've never been on a run quite like this.
Yes, 407, they're out. Trying to see. They're kind of jumping around now. 724, they jumped off. 347, I know this guy is usually on. 347,
what's
on the next round. What's up, man?
Mike from Queens.
Mike from Queens, you just ended a terrible, terrible streak. That was a brutal round.
Thank you for rescuing us.
No problem.
Put us back in the cage.
Guys, I was just wondering, do you think Ari Pulido gets any heat from any of the commissions in America because of the fight, because of the fight with Mickey Rourke being obviously a stage?
I'll be honest. Did Artie Pulido have anything to do with it? I think this had more to do with the Russian promoter, Gabe, is my understanding.
Yeah, I think so. They were more in, you know, it's always been my understanding that Artie kind of handles things over here, the Russian promoter handles things over there, and Artie kind of gets to broker some stuff, I think. But yeah, it would seem that connection is kind of a wild card connection. I didn't realize that Mickey had come back to the gym and was thinking about coming out of retirement. You know, I haven't been down there in a while. So I think it just probably came out of that. It was a good idea, you know. Probably seemed like some limited money, and you know, they couldn't pay to really get another opponent. So, you know, I guess how could they pay for a co-feature? I have no idea. The logic.
Well, another issue, though, Gabe, is I don't think any American commission, and again, maybe I'm overestimating their judgment, I don't think an American commission would have allowed a 62-year-old guy to fight.
Russia, how old was that Dewey Bazell guy?
He was in his early 50s, wasn't he? Yeah, I keep forgetting about that.
And I tell you, I go back and watch that. I mean, at the time, I remember watching that fight and wondering how much of a gimme that was. It just seemed like everybody was just – we started that promotion standing at the finish line clapping, saying, come on, Dewey. Everybody was really excited about it, and the fight seemed shamish, in my opinion. But, I don't know. I mean, it's such a weird sport because everybody knows everybody. It's a small community, even though it's a worldwide sport. And so did somebody say to somebody, look, this is what it is. Mickey wants to have a fight. This is the guy he's helping out. We'll put on something for the fans, and everybody can see Mickey Rourke win a fight. You know, I mean, how harmless is it? I don't know. But just is like, dude, you know, it kind of makes us look bad.
Yeah, I thought it was terrible. It's just a joke. It makes the sport look like it's embarrassing. And I just got another comment.
I don't think
comment.
He gets any heat here, though. Just to answer your question, I don't think he gets any heat. I mean, you know, Texas, you know, look at them. They don't
That's
get any
true.
Heat.
But I just got a comment. I wonder what you guys think about it. I think Terrence Crawford's a good fighter, and he had a great year. But if, say, Mikey Garcia decided to actually fight, wouldn't he be Fighter of the Year? Because I don't know. I just think it's hard to give someone Fighter of the Year when I just think they were plugged in. Like, Terrence Crawford is doing what Mikey Garcia should have done, right?
But he didn't do it.
Right.
At the end of the day, he did it. I mean, what's my saying? Next man up. You're right. When Terrence Crawford gets that trophy, he ought to thank a couple of people. He ought to thank Top Rank, Cameron Duncan, his trainers, and then Mikey Garcia. Anyone can be plugged in. You still have to step up to the plate and deliver.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I'm just saying I will give it to Kovalev because he was actually in a 50-50 fight, whereas Terrence Crawford was just plugged in, and it seemed like he
– I agree with that. I tend to agree with that. I don't know if Crawford was in a fight that he was supposed to – that he could potentially lose. I guess maybe the Ricky Burns fight. But just stylistically, I felt like he was the better guy in that, and just all his attributes. I didn't see him – but that's – I mean, you can't – it's hard to dock a guy for being a winner and for being good, you know? He's a solid choice, you know?
Well, even Lomachenko, I don't know about you guys, but I thought he had a draw with Salido. And then it was a 50-50 fight with him and Garrett Russell, and he exposed them. But I would like to think over Terrence Crawford, but then yeah, just really, what the hell does fight of the year even mean anyway?
You're right. In an era when a guy fights four times is considered the Henry Armstrong of modern day boxing, I don't even know if we should be giving out fighter of the year. Maybe we should give it the guy who had the best set of victories. But you're right. I mean, in other sports, we know that these athletes are playing a certain set amount of times, whether it's basketball, it's 82 games, baseball, it's 162, National Football League is 16. In boxing, it is such a small sample size, and a lot of these fights are hand-picked. You're right.
Yeah.
Should we even really have a Fighter of the Year award presently?
The last few years have felt that way. I always have to kind of really reason it out. And, you know, I just, like, think back to, like, Tito on his run. Like, it was pretty clear who the Fighter of the Year was. You know, maybe you could argue about the fight. But, you know, there are guys that have had runs where you just know. When Pacquiao was tearing it up, even when Floyd was dominating, and still is. But nowadays, it is. You have to add it all up, and most guys are in fights that they're supposed to win. I'm looking forward to hopefully next year. It was a lot of what I was thinking while I was watching all the cards today. It was just like, hopefully next year brings fights where you don't have to say, well, it's a good style matchup. You look at it and say, well, these are two dudes that can legitimately knock each other out, legitimately win. We just don't have enough of those fights.
Yeah, it's just – and think about it, when talking about Fight of the Year, can anybody that's associated with Al Haymon even be in the running? I mean, he's not even fighting enough.
You know what? That's a great point, because the bottom line is the way he quote-unquote advises you, he may be a rich man, but you're right, in terms of actual achievement in the ring. Think about all these Haymon guys. They all fought about twice this year, which most guys do. The thing that I find amazing, and I'm trying to find out, what is Lamont Peterson? What is Adrian Broner? What is Lucas Matisse? What is Danny Garcia? What is Danny Jacobs? What is Peter Quillen? Do you have any idea what they're doing in the first quarter of 2015?
No.
Because quite frankly, they don't know either.
Promoting a movie about Vinny Pagliano. It's not even a movie about your guy. I don't know. You know, it's a very strange thing. And it's, you know, Al's only 1 year removed from being voted by the Boxing Writers Association of America the manager of the year.
Yeah, how do you award a guy and he doesn't even show up for the award?
Well, I mean, you know, the same group of people that gave, you know, Dan Raphael the Nat Fleischer Award.
Oh, God, come on. Jeez, wow.
Guys,
whatever the holiday spirit here. Jeez.
Guys, do you ever... Whenever you see Al Haymon at these like press events, do you guys even try anymore to talk to him, or it's just not like, hey, he's going to be there, but you just can't talk to him?
No, I mean, really, he's like Kaiser Soze. He's very hard to reach. And listen, I'm not going to go up there and force a guy to talk to me. If you don't want to talk, it's just going to be an exercise in futility.
He's actually kind of friendly the times I've talked to him. He insists on being called Al, not Mr. Haymon. But he just says, I'm not going to be on the record. But he'll answer some questions, but he just won't. Like maybe like one, maybe two, but nothing really that in-depth. And then you're kind of like, oh, I got to go. And then
yeah,
you go. That's been my experience with him.
You'll get more out of Marshawn Lynch in a post-game interview than Al Haymon. Let's just put it that way. Anything else we can do for you?
No, I'm good, guys. You guys have good ones.
All right. We have someone waiting at 718. Domingo has been waiting patiently there, Gabe.
All right, I will track him down, 718. You sure about that? Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
He did try to get him. That was that weird one earlier. 718, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Domingo, what's going on?
Listen, guys, for the Pacquiao fight, didn't buy the fight, saw the replay, and I'm going to be doing this for Pacquiao Mayweather because I think the next pay-per-view I'm going to buy is probably Cotton Alvarez. But for Pacquiao Mayweather, not buying no more pay-per-views. I might just get invited to a house, and I might chip in just like that, maybe. But I think both of those fighters are not fighting quality fighters. I think you guys gave too much credit for Pacquiao's win. You know, I saw the fight, and this guy wasn't that good. Algeri wasn't good. And what I've noticed is Algeri was able to hit him cleanly a lot of time. It's just he didn't have no pop. And I noticed the same thing with Bradley. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I think Pacquiao's tailor-made for Mayweather. I think this guy, I don't know why Mayweather doesn't want to fight him, but he just lunges, you know, he's open to get hit. And the fighters that he's had trouble with are boxers. You know, the first Eric Morales fight, the four fights with Marquez. And Mayweather with that shoulder roll would trouble him a lot. Any thoughts?
I wish Floyd was as confident as you were. That's my thought.
But what am I seeing wrong? Because I don't know, Pacquiao,
he hit with over right hand all day.
He just hasn't fought a fighter that could crack.
Well, the Pacquiao's, I mean, Floyd's fighting slow guys that are predictable, that are pattern-based, and don't really change up their rhythms at all. They're not really, you know, feint masters either. You know, Maidana, in the first fight, might have been as complex a fighter as he's faced. Maybe I'll give Cotto, he gave a really nice run, really nice game plan, and the fight was tougher than the scores would let you believe. But I think when you look at it, who is Floyd been troubled by? Aggressive guys who are not afraid to come right at him and punch him in the mouth. But why has he been successful with them? Because they're slow. They don't use feints. The footwork isn't good. And they throw wide punches. I mean, you know, Marcos Maidana and to some extent Miguel Cotto, although he did straighten out his shot. Manny Pacquiao doesn't fight that way. Sometimes he throws wide. Sometimes he's wide open. But generally he throws straight punches. And he's an explosive fighter who's fast and uses feints and upper body movement. And he's a left-handed fighter, which Floyd, his own father, who trained him, says he doesn't want my son to face southpaws because the style doesn't match up well with southpaws. So, I mean, all those things make it a fascinating fight, but, you know, I wouldn't worry about having to pay for that fight because it's never going to happen.
True. But another thing, guys, I think you guys are being too easy on Bob Arum. I know he has, you know, I think that this guy, he puts a lot of these fighters into situations where they cannot basically get out of a contract. It's like impossible. And at the end of the day, these fighters don't want to fight with him. Let him go, you know. I know he wants to get compensated, but he seems like he's asking more than, you know.
Domingo, let me ask you something. Have you ever
entered
into a – Domingo, let's just stop. Have you ever entered into a contract?
I have.
All right. Do you ever tell the cable company, you know what, I don't want to be with you anymore. Just let me go. Domingo, can you live in the real world?
Listen, guys, I'm an accountant. I'm always reviewing our partnership agreements and all these things. But in boxing, you know, and you've seen the movies and the comments, how these promoters, you know, they put languages there that is basically impossible for these guys to get out. Or they'll trick them into taking money in advance, and they'll have them.
Hold on. Now you're talking about Don King, though. You're not talking about Bob.
No, even Bob Arum. Doesn't Pacquiao all the time owe him money? It's come out on ESPN.
The fact that Pacquiao needs $7 million advance because he's doing whatever he does, how? And then Bob wants Bob to give him a loan, and Bob funds him the money. Whoa, that dastardly Bob Arum. He's allowing Manny Pacquiao to have $7 million loans because he's in debt. What a bad guy, Domingo. You're right. He should go to jail.
No, I'm not saying
Domingo,
he should go
to
jail.
Domingo, seriously, are you listening to yourself? Because you sound like one of those internet guys that writes on, like, the message boards who have no real clue of the reality of the business. These guys have managers. They all have lawyers, okay? I believe promoters have every right to enforce their contracts just like anyone else.
No, I understand. I understand that. But the problem with these guys is that they've been advised by – and they're being advised by 10 different people at the same time, and they're put in a situation where – they really don't know what the hell they're doing. You know, it's not only one fighter. Most fighters have problems with contracts.
Domingo,
it's not like one in the blue. It's like
all responsible.
Of them.
Huh? Hang on a second. At some point, somebody has to be responsible for themselves. You keep saying I'm a grown-ass man. I'm 41. I'm not in any situation that I don't want to be in, unless it springs up on me out of nowhere on the street. You know what I mean? Like, especially when it comes to money. I'm in full control of every business decision that I make. And if I'm not understanding it, then there are hundreds of thousands of dollars or, you know, long-term, financial plans being laid out in front of me and I don't understand it, then I get somebody who does. And I don't understand why boxers do that. And maybe it is a culture of ignorance. And these guys are kind of trained animals on some level, the way they're trained to listen to one person and to push past human limits. They're told kind of just shut up and do it, shut up and train, shut up and fight. I get that, and I think there should be more protection for them. But unless we're sitting here talking specifics about what the contract says with Mikey Garcia, I think it's kind of unfair to just say it's Bob Arum's fault. What if Mikey Garcia just simply wants a better deal, wants to move across the street to Al Heyman, and is thinking simplistically, hey, I want out of my contract. How do I do that? I don't think that's fair that he should be able to just cut ties when he's getting to the part of the career where he's getting bigger purses, making more money, and therefore Bob, who has invested a lot of money in this guy, is now actually going to start to get back into the black. As an accountant, you could understand that. It just doesn't make sense. It's not really fair to just say, oh, you just
Domingo,
cut ties.
We got to get running, but Domingo, we got to get running, okay? Just
take it easy, guys.
Bye. And please live in the real world. I'm sorry. I ain't got time for that nonsense on this show. Take it to a message board. I'm sorry.
It's the same vein of guys that make the trades, you know, like in the NBA, they call them the radio shows.
You know me, Gabe.
Yeah.
I don't write the poor fighter story. They're all getting, no, they're not. A lot of them get advances. A lot of them rip people off. They do. It's the truth. Talk to people in the business, and they'll tell you the most dastardly people are not always the promoters or managers. It's the fighters. And I can tell you a lot of stories, and people don't want to come off as bitter, where they flat out take people for rides, and then they ditch them. And those stories are never told because it's not convenient, because it doesn't fit with the archetype of poor fighters. I'm sorry. Andre, I've had people tell me that the Goosen should just let Andre Ward go if he doesn't want to be with them. What world do you people live in?
Dating. It's a business relationship. You know, it's people don't really get that. It's an investment. It takes a long time. When you really think about, like, we were like writing a piece about for the trainers on Max Boxing and talking to Joe Goosen about it, and he was saying, you know, even if you've got the blue chip prospect guy, he's not making that much money for a four rounder, and you're the last guy to get paid. You're getting paid like 10%, and then even then, the fighter realizes how little money he's making after everybody's taken their bite and then taxes. Then he shorts you. Like, I've heard that story over and over again. I, just personally dealing with fighters, Peter Quillen and I used to get along famously, and then things kind of turned because that's sometimes the nature of it. Fighters are no better than anyone else. I mean,
you know what's funny?
They all should be dealt with on a case-by-case basis.
If someone once said, how come a manager can get up to 33%? Isn't that right? They're not the one taking punches. I said, no, they're not. But at the same time, the fighter chose to do this. But beyond that, I know managers that have put up hundreds of thousands of dollars in a signing bonus.
Yes.
They give $2,000-$3,000 in a stipend. They pay for 13, 14 abortions or stints in rehab, right? At that point, how else are you going to make your money back? This is a business. And that's why I tell all managers two things. Don't come off as Father Flanagan, young managers. And number two, you better have a contract, because then if you work on a handshake and then the guy leaves you, I always say, you learned a lesson. Don't ever be so stupid again. Gabe?
Yeah.
Here's the latest rumor, though. It looks like Jean Pascal may bypass the mandatory shot at Stevenson, and he might fight Kovalev. Is this karma kicking Adonis Stevenson in the ass?
Is karma cowardice? I don't understand. You know that he hasn't. How do you step into a division and have that much run and everybody going, you know, myself included, this is the man. And you just have, like, all of a sudden you just kind of shrink from the spotlight, try to, like, game the system. I'm going to get paid for fighting, you know, mismatches, but while avoiding top competition. I think it's all coming home to roost. And maybe he ultimately is the smartest guy and that he'll leave himself, like, let somebody else run the gauntlet, and then I'll get that one guy and beat him, and then I'm the man, and I don't have to fight as many people. Maybe ultimately he's a genius, but this just doesn't look good. But, man, this would be a good fight.
Gabe, 7 minutes down.
7 minutes
down. Let's hit the phone lines.
All right. Yeah, I got Kovalev and 8. That's my early
I don't disagree.
8:05, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, hi, guys. This is Nacho.
What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? I just wanted to talk about the fight from this past Saturday with Saunders beating Eubank.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Eubank actually held up. I honestly thought he was going to get pretty much beat really easily, but he almost ended up beating that guy towards the end. And I guess obviously he's got some kind of talent because I thought he had fought a bunch of bums before he got to Saunders, so I didn't think he was legit, but he proved me wrong. And then with Fury just took Chisora apart. Chisora couldn't do anything. He looked like he was completely lost in there. And, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure about this whole waiting for Klitschko. Do you guys really think he's going to get a shot at him at some point?
No. My statement is that if it came down to Brian Jennings, who I believe HBO is pushing hard for to be Klitschko's next opponent, I'd rather watch Fury, to be honest with you. I think he's a little bit bigger. I think he's taller. I think he's more seasoned. That's just my personal opinion.
I think he's also more promotable. I think, you know,
yes,
like Brian,
that's
actually
true.
A good interview. You know, I'll take that away from him. He's actually kind of cool to talk to. Tyson Fury is an original. And you could really, he's going to talk a lot of the promotion, not Chris Algieri a lot. It's going to be much funnier, I think. You know, he's going to be poking at Ed Klitschko. He kind of believes he's there. He's got kind of this kind of put upon, like, dude, I should be further along than this attitude that I really kind of like. It's just kind of hilarious to me. He's frustrated and he's hungry. I just, to me, like, Fury is a guy that's been wanting to get in the ring and things have been kind of keeping him out and kind of keeping him away from where he wants to be. Whereas Jennings is a guy sitting on the sideline kind of waiting for the moment to show up for him. I don't agree with that strategy and I don't think it should be rewarded.
Yeah. Nacho, we got to get running, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot.
We got five minutes here. Gabe,
okay.
Who's next?
407, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Scott from Orlando.
Scott, welcome aboard.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Listen, I'm listening to the show. I don't understand what you say about Rosado cutting up pretty easily. I agree that he does. I'm taking Rosado here in 8 rounds, believe it or not. Quick question for you. Are these fighters under these various promoters, are they paid so lowly that they're switching over to Al Haymon, or what's the appeal? Or where does Haymon, where is he getting this money from to pay all these guys? And a lot of them are very inactive. So,
That's the million-dollar question. But a lot of these guys are getting paid well. They could just probably get paid better with wherever Haymon is getting his largesse from. And, you know, the rumor is that it is a hedge fund out there, I believe, in Topeka or Kansas City with Waddell and Reed. And he's basically funded by this entity, and he's going to try to create his own league. And what I'm being told, guys, is that the NBC announcement will be made relatively soon, and we'll see where it goes from there. And I think the onus now, after basically playing ball control or keep away for the latter half of 2014, let's see what quality and caliber of fights Haymon puts on the upcoming year.
That's the big question. That's a huge question for next year for me. Is what's the quality? What are we? You know, if you're buying up all the talent and you don't fight them against each other, then what's the point? But if it becomes a cavalcade of stars and we just get endless like fights of the year and guys are really scrabbling and you build almost like a UFC all action kind of league, you know, we'll deal with the logistics of all the problems perhaps. But I'll accept that on some level. You know, as long as it's entertaining.
Listen, we got to get running, okay?
I appreciate it, guys.
All right, thank you. I think we have time for one or two more callers. Gabe, who's next?
860, you're live on the next round.
What's up, guys? CT.
CT,
that's
we got just a few
up,
minutes. What's
right.
going on?
Yeah, I'm going to make it fast. I think DeLorme and Hank Lundy both hit the canvas in this fight, but I'm picking Lundy by decision. And I'm picking Lemieux by stoppage. I don't think Rosado's eyes hold up in this fight.
I tend to agree with you, and Lundy, I think, has more skills than DeLorme. Guys, what I'm worried about, the chin. He's been a little bit chinny for all his talent.
DeLorme needs to get busy offensively and find out about that chin. I love that double knockout call. But I'm going with DeLorme. I think he gets aggressive late and comes on strong, maybe scores a knockdown. And I'm taking Centeno as well.
CT, we got to get running, okay?
Thank you.
Gabe, let's stick in one more call before we call it a night here.
Let's see what we got. It's a little slim picking. 714, have you done that? 714,
hey,
you're live.
Lenny the Fight Smith, guys.
Hey,
Lenny, you got about 90 seconds or less. What's going on?
Awesome. I just wanted to quickly chime in, being the resident lawyer that calls in. You know, I feel like the Mikey Garcia lawsuit is a little bit more complex than some of the other ones, like the Andre Ward one and some of the other ones that we've seen. There's a couple novel issues that are at play that I won't bore you guys with details-wise. But I feel like the big motivation factor behind all these is just there's a timeline for all these personal service contracts can only go at most 7 years. So there's a little bit of a benefit to just sitting down and saying, you know what, I'll just ride it out. I don't have to fight. And then when my time's up, then I'll move on to somebody else.
Yeah, Lenny, that's true. But here's the other issue, though. In a lot of these boxing contracts, if you get suspended or if you get hurt, that time gets added on. And the precedent has been, and Nonito Tonero learned this, those contracts and those extensions, they are enforceable. That's been the track record.
I think it only goes up to 7 years, though.